Welcome to Perspectives. I'm Joan Herman. This year marks the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Uprising, credited with igniting the gay rights movement in the United States. The uprising occurred after police raided a gay bar, the Stonewall Inn, in New York City. Raids on gay establishments were commonplace in 1969, as homosexuality was illegal in most states. Yet rather than succumb to police, patrons fought back, triggering riots over the next several days. Today in the studio, I'm speaking with three local activists about the LGBTQ rights movement since that formative moment and their personal experiences living as members of the queer community. Mindy Stokes directs Clatsop Community College's Lives in Transition program and also teaches women's studies. Native historian Marco Davis, a dance instructor and massage therapist, has served as co-chair of the Astoria Pride Festival and founded Dragulation, a drag queen dance extravaganza. And Tessa James Scheller, a retired nurse anesthetist, co-founded the Lower Columbia Q Center and has been active with organizing Astoria Pride and the Lower Columbia Diversity Coalition. In 2013, she came out as a person who is transgender. This program is pre-recorded. Welcome to the studio, Mindy, Marco, and Tessa.
Good morning.
Hi, thanks for having us.
You all are well known in the community and are very public about who you are. Has that been at all hard for each of you? Marco, I'll start with you.
Yeah, it has been, but it's also been very liberating and freeing as well.
Explain.
Well, I just have found, especially in the last 10 years, that being myself has been an easier journey than in years past. Like, I've never actually, I was 40 before I ever felt comfortable with being a gay man. And the last 10 years have kind of increased my comfort zone and such. And with all of the things that we have brought to the community with the Lower Columbia Q Center and with Pride and with Dragulation and all the other events that we do in the area, it has opened the eyes of our community, I feel. And so it's encompassing that way. But at the same time, with the amount of tourism that we have in the area now and a lot of out-of-towners that aren't familiar with us, I walk out as my proud self and then usually get faced with quite a bit of negativity during the day as well. But not from locals, but just from other people experiencing our magical community.
You still do?
Oh, every day, yes.
Wow, and I apologize for mispronouncing Dragulation.
Hey, everybody does. I just remembered it's a drag revolution.
Oh, I'll remember that. Mindy, what about you? Has it been hard to share your real self with the community?
excuse me. No. You know, I was 30 when I came out, and so I already had a good sense of self. And because it took me about 3 years to figure it out, you know, this was pre-Ellen, you know, there was maybe one gay bar and one in a town, and it was in a seedy part of town. So it was pre-pop culture where we're everywhere. And so it took a long time for me to figure out. And so once I figured it out, I was so happy because it was like I had a piece of the puzzle of Mindy didn't fit right. And once I figured that out, I was so happy. And I told every single person I came in contact with, to the detriment of jobs, housing, you know, family, excommunicating me, if I can say that word in this context. So, but what I have found is that I have to be true to myself. And I refuse to just be tolerated. You need to just give me my same civil rights as everybody else.
Yeah.
And I'm here to disrupt the system of heterosexism and patriarchy and racism and all the things that really reside in the same structure of domination.
And nobody wants to be tolerated, do they?
No, that's insulting. Give me a break. I'm one of you. I'm one of many. And we're all in this together. So let's all work together and make a better world. And I have a mixed race baby. And I have to be myself. I have to be myself and comfortable with who I am because I have to raise her to be that.
Mm-hmm.
Tessa, what about you?
Well, I've enjoyed a good long life, and so I was an 18-year-old in 1969, and that was when I had my first adult boyfriend while I was serving a tour in Vietnam. So I came out then, as far as coming out to myself, and I think most of us would agree that self-acceptance is really a big key for a lot of us, and that may be the hardest person to come out to is ourself. So I accepted myself as a queer person then, although the terminology was odd and changes with the cultural terms. But I really couldn't deal with the fact that I was also a transgender person, and that took me a lot longer to deal with. I didn't want that to be true, and I worked very hard to act like a regular man, even though that was not how I felt.
Now, you told me before the interview started that you were in Vietnam and had a boyfriend, a fellow soldier back there, but neither of you could come out publicly. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. We were very, very, very much afraid, and we would hide. And you certainly heard the terms, the love that has no name, because obviously we could not tell. We could not reveal ourselves. And it was a scary time. As I told you earlier, I'm living in Vietnam with a bunch of other 18 and 20-some-year-olds, and we all have automatic weapons. It's not a safe place, really. And I had a lot of fights that actually involved other soldiers. And now, since I was a medic, I also tended to the wounds of something called friendly fire. So people who are not so friendly still have weapons, and that's a dangerous situation. Mm. They also have prejudice and hatred.
Do you think others in your platoon knew that you were gay?
Oh, I'm sure they suspected it. You bet.
Did they treat you differently at all?
Oh, yes. I was a loudmouth, and therefore people were ready to let me know that that wasn't going to be okay. I was glad I got out of there alive, and I was as afraid of other soldiers as I was of any Vietnamese people.
Let's talk just briefly about Stonewall to set some context. What does that mean to each of you? Is that as much of a trigger point in the gay rights movement as it is made out to be? Mindy, what do you think?
That's a great question. So pre-Stonewall, there was a man named Frank Kamani, and he had a PhD in astronomy and worked for the U.S. Army Map Service and was found to be homosexual and was discharged, was kicked out, lost his job. And he fought to have his job reinstated. The Supreme Court denied to hear his case. This all happened a decade before Stonewall. And so what I like to tell my students and what I tell my daughter is that movements are built on other people's hard work, and that I stand on your shoulders and Margaret Frimmith's shoulders and the women before me and the men before me, and then my students stand on my shoulders, and that hard work is being done at all times, and you never know where the tipping point is. I never thought I would be able to be married in my adult life. I had no clue that was coming.
It's so cool.
And you're just mentioning one of the huge advancements made in gay rights over the last 50 years with the Supreme Court banning all bans on gay marriage just 3 or so years ago. I can't remember the exact year.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah, and I remember when, I think it was Lawrence versus Texas in the early
2000s. 2003,
when the Supreme Court ruled that right to privacy was privileged over being...
Ideas of sodomy,
mm-hmm. Which then I remember the gay community in Florida where I lived was just, we were so happy because that made it so that what we did in our houses was no longer illegal.
So, and you're not talking about...
So incredible, right?
Excuse me?
I was just going to ask, you're not talking, just in case anybody's wondering, you're not talking about this act being performed in public. You're talking about behind closed doors in the privacy of your
home. Private loving
home.
Relationships. And private loving relationships that are very similar to experiences that heterosexual people have as well. But what can be termed sodomy was, they wrote books about it. It wasn't necessary.
I'm just curious, is our country more hung up on homosexuality than other countries? Is it something about our own history, our Puritan background for some of us? Or is it just something that goes along with being human that we don't understand people who are different from us? Marco, you want to touch that one?
Oh, wow. Well, I don't know if I'm allowed to touch it, but I do feel that because of just the amount of Christianity in our culture specifically, there is always that built up fear. I mean, I remember growing up Catholic in Astoria and just how all the time the priest would be coming into the classes that I was in to like talk to us about how homosexuality was so sinful and, you know, to get away with all these, to get away from it. And I think that we just get that kind of stigmatized, but it really is global in so many ways. I mean, there are some cultures I find that are more accepting, but really, I mean, no, I mean, there's when we don't understand something, we fear it. And in fearing it, we never can see it for what it is. And one of the things that I learned in therapy that I try to put to everything in my life is that the only way that we can overcome our fears is to turn around and greet it as a friend and get to understand it. Because even our best friends were strangers to us the moment before we met them.
Great point. Great analogy. Right? Yes,
may I
Mindy?
Say something real quickly?
Please do.
Quickly. That's a lie, isn't it? So, you know, homophobia is rooted in sexism. So we live in patriarchies, most societies around the globe. And patriarchies are male-dominated, male-centered, and male-identified. And so when, historically, when what is seen as feminine is devalued and even hated, misogyny, and when homosexuals have been thought of as effeminate, as feminine, then there's this hatred that goes on. And so I think that homophobia is rooted in sexism because of that. Anything female. Now we continue to move away from that, but not always. I mean, homophobia is alive and well throughout the world. Sexism is, gender violence, gender-based violence, which, yep, again, I think is rooted, again, in sexism.
It's so true.
What was it like growing up knowing that you were queer?
Terrifying.
And you grew up in Astoria.
Yeah.
So we think, many of us, of Astoria as a very inclusive place.
It is.
But was it that way in, say, the 1970s when you were coming of age, Marco?
No, not at all. I felt terrified every day of my life. And after I was in high school in the 84 to 87 and just beat up every day. And in 87, I had like a horrible hate crime where I was like kind of stalked for a while and chased down and beaten down in the middle of the street up on 8th and Niagara. And it wasn't a time where you could really say anything about it, you know. And I didn't, I told my best friend about it, Sari, and she kind of had my back. And I had a couple of girlfriends in high school that really had my back and kind of watched out for me. But after that, I couldn't walk all around anywhere by myself for 10 years. Just the sound of a Toyota pickup, like, put me in a total panic attack.
Did you return to school?
Oh, yeah. No. The thing that I look at it as a gift, because it's kind of the only way I can look at it, is that all of it has taught me that you never let them see your weakness. Nobody knew. I went on as the perfect child that I always tried to put across and didn't let anybody know that I was so damaged.
Did your parents know?
No, God, no. No, them especially not.
How were you able to hide it?
Well, I worked all the time and just kind of hid myself in my studies. But, you internalize so much when we're growing up. You know, I had this huge chip on my shoulder for ages. And
yes, we clearly learned early on that these are not subjects you can talk about with friends, with family, with anybody. For me, the feeling was of complete alienation, to the point I literally, By the time I was a teenager, I'd convinced myself that I probably was an actual alien sent to Earth to observe humanity, because I knew no one from humanity who thought or felt the way I did. Her certainly hadn't expressed thoughts of loving men and women and feeling like a female person in a male body. Those were not feelings other people ever expressed in my presence.
How young were you when you first felt that way, Tessa?
My sister named me Tessa when I was 3 years old, and apparently I don't really remember my youth very much.
Sister named you?
My sister named me Tessa, yes.
How
she
did
says,
that
you're
happen?
My sister. Well, she had too many brothers, and she thought I was the best brother that could be a sister. And that worked just fine as long as I didn't have to go to school. But in school, unfortunately, a Catholic school again, but with a lot of regimentation and a lot of gender, kind of specific seating and everything else, and that didn't work any longer. That you learn to just hide, and you learn to hide your affect, you learn to hide ideas, appearance, thoughts. It's a terrible way to live, and I it's so much better now.
Were you tortured in high school?
Oh, I had similar experiences of being afraid constantly, and I had designated bullies, it seemed, and being a sissy kid, that was, I just assumed that was going to be part of my life.
Do you think your sister intuitively knew that you did not feel like a boy?
Yeah, I think my mother did too. And they really didn't want to talk about it after that, of course.
What about you, Mindy? How was coming of age for you?
Well, in my household, my stepdad said every day a queer should be put on an island and bombed.
Oh.
That's what he said every day. So there was... I didn't even know, I never even saw a lesbian until my mom had a friend who was a lesbian, and I was already in my 20s. And I didn't know women could be partners, like wives, live together, share a house together and a life until I was in my late 20s. I never saw that. So I didn't even know it was a possibility. I know that I remember being 19 and having my first real crush on another woman. But I didn't know I could act on that. I had no idea because I'd never seen it. And so really the isms that I experienced my entire life were more around sexism. Then when I came out and people hated me just because I was lesbian one day, identified as lesbian one day and straight the day before, I then understood homophobia and I could better understand sexism. I could really wrap my mind around it. And I would like to thank Marco. You know, when I first met him, I thanked him for the work that he did in this community, because he made it easy for my family to move here in 2007. And he paved that way so that we could come here and be, people are so kind to us and they love us and they love our daughter. And that has been the experience for us since we got here 12 years ago. And I am so grateful. I'm so grateful, and I'm so grateful to Tessa, all the hard work that the people in this community have done long before I got here that make it safe for us.
I think we became the mentors we never had. We became the role model. We became the professional people that could articulate a worthiness and a validity to our experience that was unassailable, that we are people that contribute, that give back, who are leaders in our community, and we have just so happened to have different orientation or gender identification.
If you're just joining me, you are listening to a pre-recorded interview with Mindy Stokes, Marco Davis, and Tessa James Scheller. Do you ever kind of resent having to be or feel like you have to be role models?
It's a privilege for me.
Totally. It's part of the work. Like, there was a moment when, I mean, I've always just kind of been that. I've always been in the service of people. From a very young age, growing up at St. Mary's, and the way that my mother and father both did work in the community. And so I've always just given of myself always, and that's just kind of who I am. And so it is such a gift and a blessing to get to participate in the community the way that we get to, you know, like when we gave birth to the Q Center, it was one of the greatest things. And
we worked at it for a year.
Yeah.
Before launch.
Yeah, I know.
Well, and Marco, you recently, got into some hot water, I think is not an overstatement, involving reading to children at the Astoria Library.
Yes.
And it's drag, Drag Queen Story Hour.
It's so true, and it's still going on. There's a group of some people that are going around to different churches in the area with a petition trying to prevent me from ever reading at the library as myself or as Daylight. And it's just so mind-blowing to me because all it is stories of inclusivity and universal love and acceptance. And that is exactly what we should be sharing with our children and with everybody else in the world. And it has been, it solidified kind of my journey even more, like, because we are talking about activism, and in many ways I've always walked on that line of nonpartisan because I'm involved in so many things in our community. I always teeter on working with all forms of people, and so I don't sway in those strong opinions publicly. And my whole mission is just to walk with universal kindness and loving acceptance of all people. And I find that prevents me from putting that hate in my heart. And so even when that whole thing happened at the library with the protests and everything, and they wanted like police to be escorting me down and everything, and I said that I wanted to walk, and so a bunch of friends walked with me, but I told them that we couldn't go with anger and stuff, that we just have to step forward with kindness, because it's the only way that we can listen to each other. If we're yelling, we never hear what's being said. And I said hello to them when they were standing there protesting. Like, I have no hatred for any of them. I hope that they would listen to our stories and start to soften their own hearts and understand.
Did they respond back?
Apparently on Facebook. I'm not on social media. It's been almost 2 years since I've been on social media, so it's been really fascinating, like, all this hatred for me that's been going around that I haven't even been involved in. But apparently on social media, he commented about how he was taken aback that we were so kind to them and everything.
You're a human being.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah.
How did the children respond to you?
They love the story time. Even when I went and read as myself for Pride Week, and it was incredible, and there were even more people than when I did it in drag, and there was no protest, and it was beautiful. I have quite a little family of friends, and a lot of my performers have had children, and so I call them my grandkids and stuff, because they are part of that drag family that we've created here.
Mindy, you are in a position of responsibility as a teacher, a college instructor. How do your students respond when they learn that you are a lesbian, or do they respond at all?
No, I don't know that they respond. They may privately. Things are rapidly changing. So now I would say a third of all of my students identify as transgender, where just 2-3 years ago, that wasn't the case.
One third.
Oh, yeah. Whether that was in Lives in Transition or Women's Studies. So queer people have had a presence now in our larger society pretty strongly for the last decade, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And in positive ways. Those positive ways are continuing. And so what I mean by that is it's not that, all lesbians are out all night drinking at a bar and having orgies. It's that, guess what? We go to work, we have children, we pay our taxes, we go to soccer matches. We do everything straight people do. And so we're represented in ways we weren't before. And so people aren't surprised anymore, I don't think. And again, if they are, I don't know. Can I make a comment about what you were talking about with Marco?
Yes, please.
I'd like to say that what made that situation unsafe was the man that came there and videotaped and streamed it live. That was featured on the Daily Astorian's paper. It was not Marco. Marco's safe. Reading in daylight dress, if I say that correctly, is not unsafe. None of that is unsafe. Transgender youth are part of every community now. Mm-hmm. Kids are figuring out they're trans, or they're allowed to declare that they're trans much earlier. And so we need to have people represented. They need to be represented. So what happens is when Marco reads when he's dressed as daylight, then that signals to that young trans youth that they're seen and that they're okay and that they're whole. That is not unsafe. The man who videotaped, and this makes me mad, who videotaped that made the place unsafe. Because for me, when I see someone showing up like that, I don't know what he's going to do. Okay, I'm not afraid of Marco. I'm not afraid of those children. I'm not afraid of their parents who are bringing them to the library. But I am afraid of that guy and men like him.
And the police did mm-hmm. show up to ensure that everybody was safe, just yeah. in case.
Yeah. Well, he made some comment about a gun. And then somebody else mentioned cutting my testicles off and shoving them down my throat.
Oh, wow.
So,
I had no idea about that.
Mm-hmm.
Have you all struggled with self-esteem in light of the abuse that you suffered for many years?
Completely.
And if so, how do you get beyond that?
Therapy.
You mentioned therapy,
Marco. Oh, therapy saved my life. Because shame is just one of those things that it's difficult to overcome. And when we have shame of every aspect of your life kind of thrown at you all the time, it makes it difficult to find the self-worth.
Did you contemplate suicide ever?
I guess, but I never would because I have a different path in life.
And unfortunately, 41% of our population will consider suicide.
It's so true.
And will attempt suicide. So depression, suicide, those are real dangers for queer people.
41%.
Yes.
Do you know what the rate is for the straight population?
Less than 6%.
Wow.
It's wild.
Yeah.
Did you ever contemplate suicide, Tessa?
Yes, I certainly did. And I also thought I would die with some terrible secrets like being transgender. But we do learn that we can survive. And I think a lot of the queer people I know are very scrappy survivors. They're very resilient and they're very strong people.
It's so true.
And we will stand up for each other.
Yeah.
And my note, in contrast to some of these terrible experiences, we've just celebrated our fourth year of Pride celebrations here in Astoria and in this community, where we had really no events, no of hatred or disruption. People got along, had a great time. Thousands of people got together and
yeah,
partied on.
It's so true.
And for those who haven't attended a Pride event, it's not just queer people, is it, who attend?
No, it's
our neighbors
community.
And friends and kids having fun.
Our elected officials.
Blowing bubbles
yeah.
and doing hula hoop.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's really a good cross-section of the community.
It really
yes.
is.
The Owako High School Marching Band.
I know.
It's a great community event.
It really is.
Yes.
We just have about 30 seconds left. Positive steps that we, each of us, on an individual, one person at a kind of way can do to help make our community inclusive for everyone. Mindy, what do you say?
Watch your language. And when other people use language that is oppressive, if you're safe, call them out.
And one last comment. Who'd like to have the last word?
Oh, Tessa, don't you want the last word?
Oh, no.
I'd say listen to one another.
Yeah. Care for one another. Stand up for one another. Be a community. Let's build this together. We all have a part.
Excellent. That's a great point to end on. We are out of time. I want to thank my guests, Mindy Stokes, Marco Davis, and Tessa James Scheller, for coming into the studio and speaking about advances in the gay rights movement since the galvanizing Stonewall Uprising 50 years ago, as well as their own personal experiences living as members of the queer community. Thank you, Mindy, Marco, and Tessa.
Thank you.
This is Perspectives, and I'm your host, Joan Herman. The show is brought to you in part by a grant from the Clatsop County Cultural Coalition. Perspectives was engineered today by Dylan Hauser-Schulk. The show can be heard on the stations of Coast Community Radio. You also can find show podcasts on the station's website. If you would like to contact me, send me an email to perspectives@coastradio.org. Thanks for listening.